Sorry, in the beginning of the parasha, it says that Klal Yisrael were given Rishus Losur Esa'aretz. They were given Rishus to go and check out the Eretz Yisrael, right? Losur, you know, like from the Lashon of Sasur, right? Losur, to go out. What does it mean in English? Losur, I don't know. To go and check out, whatever, right? Losur, what? The what? Check out? Go check out. So I was thinking, like, in the beginning of the parasha, you're given Rishus Losur Esa'aretz, and how bad did it come out? It came out pretty gefährlich, right? Like the end of Klal Yisrael, 40 years in the Midbar, and the Bechila dies. That's when you were given Rishus Losur. Could you imagine at the end of the parasha when it says, Lo Yisasuru? What's going to happen if you do, right? You know, if when the Torah said, yes, Losur Esa'aretz, and all the bad things came out, so can you imagine when it's Lo Yisasuru? Okay, so that's the basis of what I'm going to explain to you. So somebody told me a story like this. You know, and what's the Lo Yisasuru Acher Lachem? You know what that is. So someone told me a story about the Stiper. Great story. I heard the story from Rav Yashar's grandson. His name is Yisalson. That's from Chaim Kanievsky's nephew. So he said that one time he was involved in a Kiruv organization, and the Stipler has a Musa Sefer called Chayi Oivon. Okay, it's a wonderful Sefer. And they were going to learn it with the Bali Tshuva. So he was sent to get 20 copies from the Stipler. Now, the Stipler didn't like giving out his Svarim, and certainly didn't like giving out lots of them at once. And you have to come to the Stipler and ask him for, like, one copy, he has explained to him why you're using it. Well, Stipler had interesting sheets like that. So Stipler, he couldn't hear also, he was deaf. At the end of his life, he was totally deaf. So he wrote on a paper that I need Sarich, a Srim Svarim, I need 20 Svarim, right? And then it said Labale, and on the other side, Tshuva. He wrote on the other side of the paper, like a little tiny paper that he just wrote on because he couldn't hear. So I need 20 Svarim Labale, and on the other side it said Tshuva, and it said his name, whatever, right? So Stipler takes this letter, they give it to him, and Stipler says, I need Sarich, Srim Svarim Labale. And Stipler's whole body started to shake. I need 20 Svarim for my husband, right? And I started to, now this is not like yesterday's Oygezmir. No. But he's looking at this, and he's 20 Svarim Labali. And the Stipler started screaming, it's a woman's handwriting. It's a woman's handwriting, right? And the Stipler started shaking. What are you doing to me? And he screamed. Now the Stipler was deaf. So the more they tried to explain to him, like to turn over the paper, right? It got worse and worse. I started screaming. So finally, they took the paper and they showed this, right? Labale Tshuva, right? So the person told the story, so the Stipler saw it, and then the Stipler started to laugh, which he never did. And then the Stipler felt bad, you know, because he made a whole matzah there. So the Stipler was like 9,000 years old and started picking up the swarm himself to help him bring him out, and that was that. So I had a kasha on the story. Good story. So I had a kasha on the story. Kasha like this, right? Me, I read a woman's handwriting, I don't start shaking. Right, I don't start checking. And the other day, my wife's teaching seminary, so all the girls are leaving now. So they write letters and thank you letters. Right? So you know, I just took a letter to read it. And I tried to shake, nothing. I asked my wife, how ugly is she? You know, like why am I not shaking? Nothing's being recorded, right? Okay. Right? Oh no, it is. Right? What's going on here? Don't send me this one. Okay. What's going on here? Why am I not shaking? It's a good kasha? It's a kasha, no? You like the kasha? You like the kasha? Okay, so the answer is like this. On Ben Ezmanim, we were driving in the north, and there's a road there that they're extending the 6. Yeah? And they're trying to get the Lebanon, all right? And they're extending it. So now, before you get on this road, because it's not yet a finished road, so there's like a checkpoint and a skei. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. If you went to the north, you probably, I don't know if it's still there, but it's just now, like a month and a half, 2 months ago. So there's a checkpoint, and then there's a scale. Come here, it's a good story. So there's a checkpoint and a scale. I'm on a road going up to the 6, okay? Just sit down, don't worry about it, right? So I'm on a road going up to the 6. I'm trying to explain why some people, like, you know, the Stipler, when he would read the letter of a woman that wrote a letter, he would shake his whole body. So I had a kasha, why, how come I don't shake when I read the letter of a lady? You know, I see the handwriting of a woman and I don't shake. It's a good kasha? It's a good kasha. You shake? Okay. So I'm on this road going up to the 6, and they have this like checkpoint, and you have to like, it says if you're a vehicle above a certain amount of pounds, like a big, you know, these 18-wheel trucks, so you have to be weighed. And they have a truck scale. Right? So, you know, Chared and Ben Osman were always trying to look for fun things to do with the children or whatever. So I told my wife, let's weigh the car. Let's weigh the car. No, because, like, you know, a lot of people, they have, like, you know, cars of $80,000 and this and that. My car is, like, 18 bucks, you know, whatever. But now I'm going to tell people, my car weighs, you know, because I got, like, a minivan. So my car weighs, eight tons. So I drive up. We're having fun. Right? And I tell the guy, no, no, yada. Yeah. Yeah. So his method sent me. I go, I want to weigh the car. Let me weigh the car for the kids. It's a schmack. I love this line. This scale only starts after like 8 tons. I don't know what the number was, right? 8 tons. The scale starts at 8 tons. You're not in the game. Not again. Right? So then I was driving away. As I remember once, we had jewelry from my wife that, you know, what you do is a lot of times you can take gold and things like that and you can trade it in, right? And they melt it down and they'll give you other things instead. They just want the gold and they melt it, right? So I didn't tell my wife, but I thought, you know, but so we went to, one time went to a jeweler and he had this scale. It was an incredible scale, right? And it weighs diamonds and it weighs gold and it weighs in how much, right? I was thinking, like, what would happen if I would go on that scale? You know, and me, you know, all pregnant, I gained a pound since my chasana, you know. Right? And that's only because, you know, when I weighed myself, I probably was only, you know, with the gapkas, you know, but now with the suit, there's an extra pound. So like me, imagine why I would go on the scale, right? What would happen if I would go on the scale? It wouldn't work, right? What's the chil? The chil is like this. There are some scales that they only weigh from this amount, and at that amount, they don't weigh anymore. Right, and there's some scales for care. They only start weighing from 8 tons. They only start weighing. So that's the shot. First of all, you know, you have like the helica stipler. It's a shot in his sensitivity, right? By me and you and us, right? Our sensitivity is way, way over there, right? We only start from 8 tons, right? And Mashane came, you know, the helica stipler. His scale is so fine. It's so fine. It's all the way down. It already had like the dots and the grams, right? She tells it for Marshall Madavidam, right? Everyone knows there's a shayla in the, you know, in going to work and shaking a lady's hand and this and that and whatever. Right? The Paiskim can say it's us and whatever. Somehow people do it, but the Paiskim can say it's us and that's it. Okay. So what would happen though? You know, I have a kasha, right? You know, you all know it's Balbatim and this and that, and they're shaking a lady's hands. What would happen if any of us would shake a lady's hands? For 1 week, we wouldn't be able to learn. Right? Right? These guys, they're kissing each other, modern Orthodox, they're kissing each other's wives. Right? What would happen if, like, you know, all of a sudden one of them give you a little peck, right? It's like 1 month, we wouldn't be able to learn, we wouldn't be able to think it out. What's the job? By them, nothing happens. What's the difference? Very simple. Very simple. The chilik is pasha. The chilik is, do you eat grass? No. Right? No, Mabel the cow. Moo. Does Mabel eat grass? Yes. What would happen if you eat grass? The baby's coming out. Right? What happens if the cow eats grass? Fine, no problem. That's the answer. That's the answer. Right? So you want to know? He kisses somebody else's wife. He shakes her hand. Nothing happens. Right? What's the shot? Right? The stipler, his level of that is because you guys are more halik. It's because you're more kaddish. So the stipler's scale starts at reading a letter from a lady and he starts shaking, right? And you know, I'm not holding there, yeah, right? And some other person, his scale starts, whoa, way beyond. And our scale starts down over here, right? But there's no way anybody here could shake a hand and there's no way anybody here could kiss his other wife and whatever and not have a feeling of it, right? So that's the answer. The answer is it's all insensitive. Someone told me a story like this. I said this story somewhere. So someone told me, a Svartish fellow. Is that a Svartish over here? Right? It's a Svartish fellow. He told me, he told me a story like this. That there was the Baba Sali's son, his name I think was Mayor. Mayor Baba Sali, that's it, right? And he was once in a, like an airport or something, I think it was. He's wearing 3 talasim over his face. 3 talasim, right? You know, 3 talasim. Can he see? Can he see anything? What do you think?
No.
Right? And his eyes were closed. Right? And he had cataracts. Right? You know, like, you know, self-imposed cataracts. Right? You know? And he was wearing sunglasses. He borrowed from Ravaja. Right? Cataracts, sunglasses, 3 talasim. Okay? He comes into the airport, and all of a sudden, his whole body started to shake. He couldn't bear the preaches and whatever. So there was a bunch of Bakram that were with him. So they made a human circle around him. He told them they should make a human circle around him that he wouldn't be able to see. Was he able to see?
No.
He wasn't able to see, right? So, okay, that was Baba Meir, right? 13 years later, one of the Bachrim that made the circle around him, right? So he came to him to get a bracha. Yeah, that's a bracha in Sfari. So he came to him to get a bracha. So he comes to Baba Meir and he says to Baba Meir, he says, no, I was one of the 13, I was one of the Bachrim 13 years ago that after Baba Meir remembers that we went around and we made a circle around him. All of a sudden, Baba Meir starts screaming, oh, what are you doing? 13 years I'm trying to forget it, and I was just at the point where I was about to forget it. It's going to take another 13 years. What are you doing to me? Right? Yeah. What are you doing to me? I love Gadol. Right. By the way, what's the Parsha about? What's the Parsha about? Look, I have some stories I want to tell you guys. Right? The Parsha is all about not talking bad about Eretz Yisrael. So it's a story of Rabbi Yaakov Kaminatsky. Right? It's so important this, because if you can talk bad about Eretz Yisrael, you know what's going to happen? You're going to have a bad memory of Eretz Yisrael. Right? You remember, there's this, there's that, there's that. And inevitably, the place that had that incredible Ruchnius foundation, right? It can't be a bad memory. So that's why you never talk bad about Eretz Yisrael. There's mice with Rabbi Yaakov like this. Right? I asked Rabbi Kaminatsky if I could say over the story. You'll see why you need Rishus to say over the story in a minute. And he told me you should say over the story. It's a mitzvah to tell the story. Right? I asked Rav Shmuel Kaminatsky last night, right? Not meaning Wednesday night, whatever. I asked because I said it already yesterday. So he told me to tell the story. It's a mitzvah to tell the story. That's what he told me. The story is that Rabbi Yaakov at the end of his life came to Eretz Yisrael, right? And this is 40 years ago. Rabbi Yaakov thought he was going to die. Now I didn't know this. Rav Shmuel told me that Rabbi Yaakov thought he would die in Eretz Yisrael because he was so weak and so old, and he was going to. He wanted to be in Eretz Yisrael. He thought he wasn't coming back, right? He had planned Tachrich in here, he planned his place in Harmanuchas, which he's actually buried in, right? And he didn't think he was coming back. In the end, Yitaka came back, and then he went back afterward, right? But that was, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, so a lot of yeshivas obviously wanted Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov to speak. So there was one place, Rabbi Yaakov couldn't speak in most places, right? So Rabbi Yaakov, one of the places he spoke was Slobodka, because Rabbi Yaakov learned in Slobodka. There's a yeshiva in B'nai Brak called Slobodka, Al-Shem Slobodka, right? So Rabbi Yaakov spoke in Slobodka. Rabbi Yaakov came to Slobodka because that was one of the few places he was speaking. All the Bachrim came, right? The Shmuel told me the extended version, which I didn't know this whole part. That all the Bachrim came from Mamish all around B'nai Brak, which is all where the yeshivas are, and tons of Bachrim came to Rabbi Yaakov. Tons. And so when they were there, there was a lot of pushing and shoving. Rabbi Yaakov was being brought in, and there's a lot of pushing and shoving to see Rabbi Yaakov and then whatever. So and it was Mamish like pushing, shoving. So somebody screamed out, Lo d'chav, stop pushing, and whatever. And then it got loud, and whatever. And then there was a little more pushing. And then Rabbi Yaakov said, like this. He said, in America, we don't have this. We don't have this pushing, shoving stuff. We don't have this. And then Rabbi Yaakov said, it must be a Makkas Medina. The Gelashim and the Gemara must be like, you know, it must be a part of the culture. And then Rabbi Yaakov, right, he was an old man, right? And I was going to say the story one way, but Rishmul said that I said it wrong. Rabbi Yaakov, he started to cry, right? And he said, I shouldn't have said that. Imagine the Gadol Hador, 94 years old, 93 years old, right? He said, I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have spoke bad about Eretz Yisrael. I shouldn't have said that. And Rabbi Yaakov started to cry. And Rabbi Yaakov said, there was Rishul Salanter, and he started talking about Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yaakov said, there was, now you see why you need Rishus to tell him such a story. Rabbi Yaakov started saying, Rishul Salanter, somebody came to Rishul Salanter and told him that he wants to know he's going to Eretz Yisrael, where should he live? So Rabbi Yaakov told him, don't make the decision based on climate, on produce, on where you're going to be able to live. He said, decide where is best, the best yeshiva for you, the best base manager, base cousin, and then live there indiscriminately near that area. He said, why? Because if you make your decision based on desert area, I don't like dry heat, I like the humidity, I don't like by Tel Aviv, by B'nai Brak, it's humid. He said, so then inevitably, you're going to start talking a deeper raw in Eretz Yisrael, you'll talk bad about Eretz Yisrael. You never talk bad about Eretz Yisrael, never talk bad. Right? Because then you talk bad about Eretz Yisrael, you know what happens? How can it be a Bachli got his whole giddle over here, his whole foundation of Ruchnius, how does he not make his vacation here one day? Right? How's it possible? How's it possible? Because right? Yeah, it's hard, Israeli, it's that, you know. Right? You know, the Baditshava, somebody asked the Baditshava, should he go and move to Eretz Yisrael? So Baditshava told him, Dover Nifla, Levi Yitzcha. He said to him, Eretz Yisrael, he says, the Gemara asked the Kasha, Gemara Brachas Avches, the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan had a big Kasha. Rabbi Yochanan said, how's it possible that you see that in Chutz Laaretz, there are people that live a long life? He was Matama. How could you have people? It says, L'man yir b'yimeichem v'bei b'neichem al adama. The only time you can have an Arichas Yamim is where? In Eretz Yisrael. So how could it be that there's people in Chutz Laaretz that they have Arichas Yamim? So they said, Rabbi Yechanan said, I think he said or somebody told Rabbi Yechanan, oh, you see that they come early to the Beis Medrash and they leave late to the Beis, and then they leave late to the Beis Medrash. So male the Beis Medrash in Eretz Yisrael, I guess, in Chutz La'aretz is like Eretz Yisrael. So that gives them life. That's the Gemara. I kind of Gemara. So Levi Yitzchak, the Badit Shavu, I said, so what do you see from the Gemara? What do you see from the Gemara? You see that what is a shul in Chutz La'aretz? It's like a Beis Knesset. It's like a part of Eretz Yisrael, right? So then what's Eretz Yisrael? It's like one big Beis Medrash, Beis Knesset. It's like one big Beis Medrash, Beis Knesset, right? Because that's where you get this. So he said, you have to know if you're going to live in Eretz Yisrael, it's like living in Beis Medrash, Beis Knesset. You act differently when you're in a Beis Knesset than a Beis Medrash, right? Come to Eretz Yisrael, you act differently. That a person, you know, when he realizes that, which Eretz Yisrael is, he'll start to, he won't talk bad about it. When he realizes it's one big Beis Medrash, it's a makom of Ruchni, he will start. Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, he was the Gadol HaDor. He was the Rashbag Mamish, he was the Mor of Eretz Yisrael. He was the everything in the world of Yosef Chaim. Yosef Chaim came to Eretz Yisrael from Europe. He was a young man. He was a young guy. He came with his Rebbe, Rav Avram Shag, right? Great Jews. He was on the boat. 3 hours before the boat was going to, you know, dock in Yafo, so the skipper, I don't know, Gilligan, whatever, he clapped on the bima. I don't know if there's a bima on the boat. It's a measure, don't worry. He clapped on the bima, and he said, in 3 hours, they'll be in Yafo. That was where the port was. The Ram Shag used to say, oh, he's the Rebbe of the Yisachayim. So just understand what's with Yisachayim. Yisachayim didn't know what to do with himself, right? He started looking at the boat, trying to see what, he didn't know what to do with himself. Yisrael, the going was never in Eretz Yisrael, didn't know even to do with himself. So finally, he didn't know what to do himself. So there was a mast over there. You know what a mast is? Like the thing, right? And when Yosef Chaim, right, started climbing up the mast, right? He couldn't, everyone's like, you know, we can believe what they see. He's on the top of the mast, Papa de Selim Engavemach, you know? Like, also a measure somewhere, right? Yeah. He climbed up the mast, he's up on the mast, right? And he's looking and looking and looking, right? And then he's on top of the mast. Yosef Chaim's on top, and Eretz Chaim Kanievsky on top of the mast, right? And he's on the mast, and like 20 minutes go by, and all of a sudden from the sun, you could see, like, you know, the where it beats onto the brown, he started seeing the shore of Eretz Yisrael, right? And he started screaming, Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. And all the people on the boat, right? They're trying now, everyone's, you've got people climbing up after him, you know, right? Eretz Yisrael. That has to be, you know, where the person's hashkaf is. He's able to learn in Eretz Yisrael. He's able to learn in Eretz Yisrael. Somebody asked me, why is it so important to learn in Eretz Yisrael? You can learn anywhere, right? Which it's true. I can learn anywhere, okay? You know, some people, the Rebbe's in America, so he has to stay in America, okay? Right? And they say that Ezra Sefer didn't come up, the Gemara says, Ezra Sefer didn't come up to Eretz Yisrael until Baruch ben Uriah, his Rebbe, died. Because if you have a Rebbe in Chos, but someone, let's say somebody, all factors are equal, and he wants to know, learning in Eretz Yisrael, learning in whatever. Somebody's asking me, he wanted to know about, so I told him like this. So I'm not saying, if a person has a reason he has to stay in America, sometimes he has to watch his parents, and that, whatever, let's say, he wants to know, what's the difference? It's like this, right? You get a phone. You have a phone?
Yeah.
How long does it take you to charge your phone? Like an hour?
Yeah, that's too long.
That's too long. Okay, the first time you get the phone, right? What do you have to do with the phone? Who knows?
You have to charge.
You have to charge for how long? Not just an hour.
A long time.
Right? A week? A year?
A week or two.
A week or two. So you have to charge for how long? What's the chilek? What's a chilek? Why do you have to charge the phone for, I think, I don't know, they say officially 24 hours, like as if, right? There's no Jewish person that can do that. You know? 24 minutes, it's done, you know, right? But you have to charge your phone for a long time. There's a bunch of guys looking around like this. Oh, that's why I'm having to go with my problems with my phone.
I never had a charger like this.
Huh?
Never heard this?
No. No, you know what I'm talking about.
Of course.
Yeah, you don't know this? No. Oh my goodness, is this only my smartphone? is that one? No, what I'm talking about.
Oh, no.
it's in the box. It says on the box. It says on the paper.
Where?
They come charged.
Give me somebody from the old dog. Ask this question.
Are you talking about this one?
Huh?
Talking about this one?
These?
Regular phones.
What's a regular phone?
Like that one. There's other phones?
Your beeper came charged?
What?
Your beeper came charged?
My Walkman.
It takes 5 minutes to charge.
No! You have to charge it the first
time. The first time it takes a while.
You ruined my story.
The first time it takes a while.
So not cool, right? No, how come in the other places when I said this, it just went like this?
The first time it takes a while.
So the first one, you know what I'm talking about.
I know. Okay.
Oh, you need to get your older.
Right? So The answer is, the first time when you're charging, when you're making the foundation, it needs us. When you come to Eretz Yisrael, you kill the mushroom. Oh. Bunch of the first time you charge the phone, you have to give it a foundation. The person wants to know, why does he need to come to Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah? Because in Eretz Yisrael, you know, Avira to Eretz Yisrael is nachkin. The Avira of Eretz Yisrael makes you smart, right? And in America, you don't have that, right? Avira to Eretz Yisrael is machke. But what can I do? And I'll end with one story, because you can't talk about Eretz Yisrael and not say a story about an egged bus driver. And the story is great, because he told it to me, my son told it to me, which means he heard it from the egged bus driver. You know, the egged bus driver is a little hakim in the yeshiva bocherim, right? And especially the high school yeshiva bocherim, right? She tagged it. So my son told us, okay, Mom, Tati, you got to know the story. This is it. This is the story. They were talking to the egged bus driver, right? He said to him, you know how you got a shteller? Egged bus driver, right? You know, you got the shirt, the tie, and this, used to drive a tank. He told him like this. He went to Rabbi David Abuchatzer. He asked him, did you ever hear about David Abuchatzer? All these Shiva kids, all these Shiva kids, right? They were mamish and like floating in Gan Eden, right? How'd you get your stealth? He went to David Abuchatzer. David Abuchatzer gave him a bracha. He gave him a bracha that he should matzliach v'nikashel. So he said, "Matzliach v'nikashel." What? Well, you should be matzliach and you should fail. Huh. It's not a very cool bracha, right? So he said, "No, he's taking a test tomorrow to be a good bus driver. You should take it, you know, be matzliach and you should fail." Matzliach. Over again, over again. Finally, the Gabbai took the marois and took them out. Said, "Bua, you got a bracha and goodbye. You know, whatever, right? Bua, 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 right?" The next day, he's taking the test. He's got like 50 yeshiva time kids mesmerized around him as he's telling the story, right? You know, knocking over little girls and whatever. Right? Kids are, he's got 50 yeshiva around him. He says, the next day he takes the test to be a naked bus driver, the official shteller and whatever. Right? He says, in the middle, he indicated right, and he started going right. Right? So the bus driver started to, the tester started yelling at him, "You're mazik, you're dangerous, what are you doing? You almost pushed that car off the road." And he said, "I did the right thing, I was indicating, and I this, and I that, I did anything wrong," right? And he's yelling at him, mamish, and screaming. He says, "Not only that, he's going to be ma'ar about him and tell the people that he shouldn't ever give him another test, he's so dangerous and whatever. But the rules are that you have to finish the test. That's the, illegally, you have to finish the test, so let's go." And they drove for another 20 minutes, right? He gets the thing, he knows the tester is about to, like, you know, end his life. Or whatever, and the tester says to him, "Okay, you pass." He says to him, "I pass? My eye, what are you talking about?" He says to him, "I yelled at you for 10 minutes, and then after you were able to drive calmly for 20 minutes, you're a naked bus driver."
Shout out.